totally worth it for the chocolate, exactly. Some of this traveled from Hungary, some of this chocolate, and some of it came from Denmark, and some of it came from CVS in Bethesda, Maryland. So, worldwide chocolate. Oh, yeah, and then there's the custom M&Ms that have the hashtag for this session that no one else will have. So I was all worried that I was going to be alone at 5 o'clock because everyone would want to go to the event party. So I really want to thank you all for coming. Thank you for not making me alone, even though all of you are sitting in the way back and making me feel... Right, and all the chocolate is in the front. So my name is Sue Hanley. I am basically a business analyst, consultant, information architect, and I spend most of my time doing the non-technology things that go along with SharePoint. And my mission is to really help clients get value from their investment in the SharePoint technology and really portals in general. I don't always focus on SharePoint. And before I hung out my shingle, I ran the portal and content management practice for a little teeny company called Dell. And spent about 5 years there. So now I'm just me. I've been consulting for about 30 years. And prior to Dell, I was the director of knowledge management at a global consultancy. So I'm going to share with you today some stories from some of my clients, some of whom are in the room, so they can chime in if I don't tell the story correctly. But the stories that I share, I have permission to tell. So I want to just sort of make that clear. And I want to talk a little bit about sort of what does this whole social thing mean, and if you're trying to do it, how you can overcome some of the barriers that you might see. So I hope that you guys will be happy to share the next 75 minutes with me, and then I promise you can go and then party afterwards. So one thing for sure when it comes to social is that everybody is talking about it. And you probably got that message from all the conversations we've had here at the conference today. So everyone from Gartner to McKinsey to IBM, everybody is talking about social. And in fact, if you've listened to the sessions about social, social really is the bright, shiny object that's coming to deliver collaborative working and employee engagement and enormous benefits and motherhood and apple pie. And why would you not want this? So lots of great things coming in the social package. So about a year ago, Gartner predicted what seems like a very significant impact of social networks. So basically saying by 2016, 50% of large organizations will basically replace email with social. But if you're concerned that maybe you're not there yet, this is what Gartner said in 2012. They thought that all that would happen by 2014. So we're not quite there yet, but clearly social has the potential to drive enormous value in our businesses. And I listened to some great customer stories today where people are really making an enormous difference in their organizations with social technology. But you know, even though everyone would like you to believe that it's going to happen right now and immediately, I want to introduce you to what I am calling the Hall of Barriers. So not always so easy in some of our more traditional organizations. So let me introduce you to a few things that I think most of us deal with. So number one, not aligned with our culture. Two, lots of other things going on, too many competing priorities. And then the big one is the lack of a proven business case. You say social, your executives hear cat videos, what I had for lunch, and where I'm going for dinner. And what basically happens is they're hearing that word, they're thinking fantasy football and the Bermuda Triangle of productivity. And I love this graphic by a really cool graphic artist in Ireland, and I had this great exchange with her saying, hey, can I use your graphic in my presentation? And she said, oh my gosh, yes, and would you like a high-resolution version of that? So, super cool. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about this. So a lot of our organizations are very, very traditionally hierarchical, where while we may say we want people to be more collaborative, that's not exactly what we're assigning tasks to individuals and not exactly demonstrating that we really mean that collaboration is important. So I used to run the portal practice, as I said, for Dell. And we had this really interesting conversation one day when I went with Michael Dell to meet with the CIO of the Navy. And Michael Dell, Dell is a very command and control organization. And when Michael Dell said something, basically everyone just did what he said. And he said something to the CIO of the Navy, something on the order of, well, that must be how it works in your organization. And basically his response was that, no, that actually only happens on the battlefield. When I want someone to kind of follow the objectives that I've laid out for them, I pretty much have to convince them that it's a really good thing and that there's business value to them. I can't just say, oh, we are going to do things this way, and it'll immediately happen all over the Navy. So it was a very interesting experience for me that he was kind of more aligned with trying to make sure that people understood what was happening and that there was some value to them. You know, in many organizations, we have lots of competing priorities, and you can't just throw a new solution at people and say, oh my God, try this because it's going to change the world. I like to think that many organizations have what I call organizational ADD, like too many things to focus on at one time. And that can be a huge problem, especially when, again, our culture isn't aligned with recognizing and rewarding people for the behaviors that we want them to model with our social technology. And then, of course, there's the Bermuda Triangle of productivity. And this is, I think, the most important thing. I think we really need to focus on making sure that there's a meaningful business case for any technology we want to deploy in our organization, but especially when you're going to ask people to change the way they work. So in order to talk about sort of, so all right, how would you solve this problem, Sue? What are people doing? I will present my roadmap to overcoming barriers to social. And we'll talk a little bit about sort of what I think, what I've seen, makes people successful with this. You don't have to snap pictures. You know, the deck is online in Yammer, so you can really get it, I promise. All right. Number one, most important thing. I used to say, years ago, I've been talking about this for a really long time, and I always say there's only one good reason to implement social, and that is that you have a business problem to solve. So instead of saying, let's do social, let's talk about what are the existing business processes that can be enabled, improved through the use of social technology. And more importantly, how are you going to know if you're successful? So if you have a business problem, there's probably some pain. And if there's some pain, there's likely to be already a business metric associated with it. So let's try and understand what is the problem we're trying to solve and what would success look like? What would it feel like and who would care? The other thing I've learned in my 30 years of trying to live in this world is that people don't just collaborate. They collaborate in the context of a business activity or a task. So you can't just say to people, oh, like, let's go just go talk about that. People collaborate in the context of trying to get work done. We engage to solve problems. And so really, really important when we're going to introduce this new way of trying to get work done, to do it in the context of a scenario where we're already collaborating. So look for some really good use cases that exist in your organization. So Jeffrey Moore of the Crossing the Chasm fame identifies what he calls the critical moments of engagement. Look for the critical moments of engagement where introducing a different method for collaboration would add value to your organization, and then work backwards from that. So if you're in a services organization, it might be looking for opportunities around a sales process, product development, sort of problem resolution, and this really works in many organizations. Resource planning, how can I find the best person with the right skills to put on my project? Or customer support, trying to solve a problem when I don't really know who might have the answer. So what you want to do is look in your organization for those moments of engagement where you know that people actually have a pain point and might be willing to try some new opportunity to get answers more effectively. And to look at metrics that your organization cares about. And it's not going to necessarily be just counts of things. User adoption shouldn't be used as a proxy for success. Businesses care about measurable business results, and what you want to look for is not, are people using the solution, but are they using it to solve meaningful business problems? So look for things, metrics, that will really resonate in your organization, things that you already are already looking at, operational metrics that will help move the needle in terms of delivering business results. So measure results, not adoption. So while I'd like to think that we really care, so that really social is really all about adoption, I think really social is really all about delivering results. So you need to look for those stories where people have used newer and more effective ways to collaborate and deliver meaningful business value. And so I am going to hopefully share some stories where real people have done real things using social technology, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to take away some of those and apply them for you. All right, number two. And this is probably the most exciting thing for me at this conference, is learning about how Microsoft is recognizing that there is a place where work gets done today. And if you want people to adopt new technologies, that you really need to bring that technology to where people work already. So what I think I'm extremely excited about is bringing Yammer into Outlook, because let's face it, we know where people work. Most of the time they're in one of two places, email or Word, the Microsoft Office stack. So let's say Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, and we'll treat them all together. And so the biggest problem we have is that people just don't want to change. And so I would argue, don't make them change. Bring the mountain to Mohammed, if you will. So for the most part, we hate change, it's uncomfortable, and it takes effort. So if you really want to make people comfortable, if you really want to make people change, try and bring the change to them. Because change is super, super hard. First of all, because I am super comfortable with the way I work today. This is how I've always done it, and it works for me. Come on, move. And the other thing is, I'm not really broken, so why are you asking me to change? So you guys probably know this story. How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. And that's because we're all listening to the same radio station, WIIFM. What's in it for me? So you need to tell me a story that means something to me in the place where I am. So I want to introduce you to somebody. Anyone know who this is? He's the elephant in the room. And I'm just going to call him the email elephant. So while we have been spending a lot of time at this conference talking about getting things done in a place other than email, what I've learned is if you want people to change their behavior, you need to bring that change to them where they are. So he is not dead. People are still using him. And I think that's really why I'm super excited about what Microsoft is doing with Yammer, bringing the Yammer groups right into Outlook. And I think that is one of the hardest habits that we have, that we're going to ask people to break. And we know email isn't perfect, because email is a very sort of one-to-one kind, or one-to-many, but closed kind of collaboration. Whereas our social spaces, whichever tool you're using, are much more open and transparent. And if you're going to send an email, you need to know who you're sending it to. The value proposition of social is that we don't actually have to know. But we are still really used to this. People are very comfortable with it, and there's a lot of behaviors that we've built up over the last 20 years in how we use email, so the conventions and the norms are there, and they're not quite there with social. So I want to tell you a little story about the Union for Reform Judaism. So this is sort of the goals that they have. They're really like any sort of association. They have members, members pay dues, and what their goal is to encourage and engage conversations among their members. So assume that basically 900 congregations, people are basically doing the same thing in different parts of North America. So even if you're not an association, that's probably going on in your company. And what they wanted to do was create opportunities to engage people around topics that they care about, all really, really good things. And the name of the solution is The Tent, kind of a great name, because you can say, you know, have your conversations in the tent, Work gets done in the tent. I'm very big on having great names for intranets because they make for great marketing campaigns. Larry Glickman over here created that name, so we should give him credit for a great name. So basically, we've got communities that are aligning people with an affiliation by role. This is what I do. By topic, here's a topic that I care about, or by attribute. So for example, there's a community for small congregations. Everything sort of ripe and in place to engage people, and all the right things were in place. I'll talk about one specific community that was really poised to be enormously successful. First of all, they were already connecting on a listserv. That listserv technology is kind of being held together by chicken wire, and the vendor that provides it is basically going south, and it has to be replaced. So there is an absolutely compelling reason to change. The new solution, which by the way is SharePoint Community Sites in 2013, and you can have conversations, by the way, in lots of different places in SharePoint, not only in the Y word. So this is SharePoint Online, Office 365, and huge opportunity now because one of the things they're trying to do is collect not just conversations, but assets that they can share. We have this great document repository feature in SharePoint, and what you didn't have with the listserv is an easy ability to search both conversations and documents. So everything poised to be enormously successful. And more important, this community exists in real life. They're already connected. They even meet face-to-face every other year or so. So lots of opportunities, all the right things, poised for success. And yet, the initial reality when we asked people to go from listservs to having conversations online was not so happy. Until one thing happened, and that is that we taught people how to connect those conversations to where they were already comfortable. And that was email. So we introduced two ways that you could connect. If you're an Outlook user, you can connect your discussion community to Outlook. And if you're not, no matter what email platform you're using, you can also subscribe using an alert. So what we said is, okay, you don't have to go there every day. We'll bring the conversation to you so it'll feel pretty much like your listserv, but it's on steroids, and we've got lots behind the scenes. So this was a really, really important thing. So two multiple ways. You can choose your way to get the information. You can also go directly to the community site. Everybody at this point has seen discussion boards in SharePoint 2013. Anyone not? Because they're really pretty. And so we have this great user experience, and the community site is really cool. And so now we've got some amazing things going on. So everything from benchmarking and best practices, how do you do that? And getting answers really, really quickly. Information sharing. I saw some really interesting transactions. I sit on the outside of this community and kind of watch what they're doing because I've got an alert. I don't have to go there. It's coming to me in email. So really interesting things related to sort of people sharing laws that might be applicable for different scenarios. Some great sort of, hey, can anyone help me? There's been a lot of conversation recently about different software products that people are exploring. Hey, has anyone ever used this? Should I use this? It's been very interesting. Some good experiences and bad experiences are being exchanged. One of my absolute favorite things that's going on that really would have been very difficult on the listserv is document sharing. So this example was someone prompting for, I'm writing a personnel manual. Does anyone have one they can share? So they shared it, uploaded the document, which lands in a document library in SharePoint. That document is now available and searchable for everyone. And so this week, there was an exchange about, can anyone give me an example of a new hire letter? So this is the basic knowledge management problem that we've been working on forever, of not reinventing the wheel. Within 15 minutes, there was an example of one new hire letter, and within an hour, there were two. And so now our repository has got this really nice, we're starting to build up examples by type. We've got a really very simple but elegant information architecture on the site. As you're uploading a document, you get prompted for the metadata that will help make that document findable later on. So it's a super cool thing. And this is one of my favorite scenarios. At their annual meeting, they were trying to staff a booth, and they're using conversations to basically figure out who can work when. So very, very interesting things. More importantly, however, is how do you talk about this? Well, you talk about it in the context of benefits. And what are the meaningful business metrics that are that we're using to say, hey, what's the value for you in participating? What's the value to the member congregations? What's the value to the URJ as a whole? So really, really important to have a plan for metrics, metrics that are meaningful in your organization, and then repeatedly and often telling those stories about what happened, what the value was, and capturing that information from the people who are taking part in the solution. Any questions about that? Make sense? Okay. All right, number three, and this is probably the hardest. You know, it's really much easier to introduce social collaboration in a culture that already recognizes and rewards people for that kind of behavior. So if helpfulness is built into your culture, then introducing a more effective way of collaborating and being helpful is just going to be that much easier. Unfortunately, that's not how every single organization works. It isn't always the case that our culture is really recognizing and rewarding collaborative behavior. In the organization where I used to work, we actually had the second level promotion. So we had principal, senior principal, and vice president. You could not become a senior principal unless you demonstrated what we called the L word, leverage, and the specific requirement in terms of the promotion nomination was describing how that person had leveraged their own skills to make other people more effective. So you can imagine that in our organization, any opportunity that gave us a place to demonstrate leverage in a way that was very, very visible was easy to adopt, because that's what everyone was going for in terms of how are you going to be promoted. So our culture completely supported collaborative behavior. And that, unfortunately, is not always the case in every organization. So I want to tell you another story. And unfortunately, the real storyteller couldn't be here today, although he was planning to. So this story is about a division of DuPont, DuPont Pioneer. And they make commercial seed products like corn and soybean and sunflower and canola, rice and wheat. So they're essentially what I would like to call an agricultural manufacturer, so really a manufacturing firm. Same kind of objectives in their organization that I'm sure you have in yours. These are not necessarily goals for social. These are goals for knowledge management in general. Social is just one of the enabling technologies that helps us deliver on this message. What's driving all of us to focus on this more effectively and more importantly is that we're all trying to do more with less. There are fewer people in the organization, and we're trying to make sure that we can scale. So their solution right now today is topic-focused communities based on NewsGator. And they are moving to a SharePoint 2013 and Yammer story. But again, I don't want you to think that the technology is what's making this work. It's really other things. And you can almost use any technology to do it. Microsoft has a great story in Yammer and Office 365. But that's not the only way to make this happen in the SharePoint world. So this is where they are today. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Global organization, culture, not necessarily 100% aligned towards recognizing and rewarding collaborative behavior. And in fact, there's a lot of engineers that work at DuPont. And in that organization and in other engineering organizations where I've worked, the sphere of collaboration tends to be the team that you're working with. And if you need help or want to reach out and find expertise, you either ask the team that you're working with or your manager, who is pretty much the intermediary between you and the rest of the organization. And unfortunately, what DuPont was experiencing and what many organizations experience is that that is very, very difficult to scale. But that culture is very difficult to change. So let me tell you their story. So here is our a manager in Egypt. So a relatively new production manager in Egypt had some questions about the best way to handle green corn during a very delicate stage of the process. Now, under normal circumstances, he was going to ask his manager, how do we handle this? The good news for our story, which makes it a very good use case, is that the manager was away. So he didn't have access to the manager. He also didn't know who else he could ask. So, you know, they had these communities, and he said, oh my God, I need to know the answer to this. It's pretty critical. We're at a very, it was a time sensitive, there are a lot of things going for this story, time sensitive issue, and I don't know who I'm supposed to ask. So he basically says, all right, well, what am I going to do? Posts a message to his community, and here's where the magic happened. So meanwhile, he goes off, he goes to sleep, it's the end of the day, and his colleagues around the world saw the post and offered suggestions. So the other actors in the story, this guy's in Brazil, I mean, I'm sorry, Egypt, he's got actors in Thailand, Indonesia, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, and the United States. I tried to put them approximately where they were. I did the best I could. So everyone saw his post. So the next morning he gets, he comes in and he finds 10 responses, two solutions, and then the rest was commentary about those solutions, sort of basically adding, well, here's how I tried something similar to that, so expanding on those two solutions. So what makes the story interesting is his estimate of the value proposition. So when I talk about metrics for squishy things like collaboration and knowledge management, I think there's a lot of value to story. And the most effective stories are the ones that have a measurable punchline. And when you want those stories to really have clout in your organization, find a punchline in the unit of measure that means something to you. So his story was about $120,000 of savings. These stories, if you would like to name this technique, you can call it SAM, Serious Anecdote Management. So what we're looking for are not just anecdotes, but serious ones, ones that have a punchline. So there's your theory. That approach, serious anecdote management, is not mine. I wish it was. I was taught this approach by Tom Davenport, who's generally considered one of the fathers of knowledge management. He willed it to me. So he doesn't do the knowledge management thing anymore, so I get to talk about SAM. All right, here's the really cool part. So an executive hears this story. Why? Because $120,000, even if you're in this giant organization making billions of money, that means something. What did he do? He wanted to recognize the person that actually asked the question, that exposed himself that I don't know something and was willing to share that. But he didn't do it in the community because his comfort zone was email. And so without even thinking, what he did, however, was make it really cool to be part of the community. So what he did was he sent an email to the guy in Egypt who asked the question, and he copied a gazillion people, his peers, on that message. And so I don't think he was being strategic at all, but what he did by sending it in the comfort zone of his peers is he now made participating in the community not just a great thing, he made it safe and he made it admirable. And he made it people aware of it where they were paying attention. So sometimes you just can't make these things happen all at once or all in the same place. And I think this strategy was brilliant, very much so after the fact, because the value, what they got out of it, that community where that question was asked, of course, now there's lights shining right on it, and everybody wants to post a question in that community because they know that someone's paying attention, and that was pretty cool. And so that one community became the third most popular community at DuPont, and other communities, seeing that there was a lot of attention paid and value to the participation, started taking a cue from what happened, and they exhibited what I like to call the When Harry Met Sally moment of user adoption. You know that scene in Katz's Delicatessen? I'll have what she's having. So that's what we're looking for. We want everyone to get that I'll have what she's having moment. And I think he probably wishes he had really planned that, but it was really cool. So the guy who runs this whole program thought this was like the coolest thing ever, and it really was. So I'm going to pose something. I actually think that if we're talking about culture and talking about social is actually an HR issue. And if you have a hero culture, it will be much, much harder. If you are recognizing and rewarding people for being heroes, it'll be much, much harder to make this work. Not impossible, but harder. So you're going to have, you know, that's why they pay you guys the big bucks, right? So it's going to be a little bit harder to do. So I like to talk about Jack Welch, and I think what was really interesting how he changed the culture at GM, where was Jack Welch? Holy cow. Pardon me? GE, I know, the G, see, I'm getting a little old. All right, so he had this concept where if you brought an idea to him, you basically had to say where else it was tried at GE in order to get recognized that this was an important idea. So we wanted everybody to kind of work. Today, Microsoft is calling it working like a network. Years ago, he called it boundarylessness. It's really the same concept. And so we wanted to make sure that every idea came from somebody else. And so what he's basically saying is that you get recognized for being part of a team by sharing your ideas and reusing ideas, not necessarily by being the hero all the time who brings new things that have never been tried or never been shared with someone else in the organization. So essentially, you have to think about social as being an HR problem. And when you think about how are we going to make this work in our organization, engaging HR early and often is really important. And you want to think about how important is it in our organization to scale individual talent into organization-wide assets. And at AMS, that was the single most important thing that we had to demonstrate in our organization, scaling each individual to become to basically create opportunities for many, many more people. So a couple of things. There's this great story. I really would encourage you to get last month's, the January-February issue of the Harvard Business Review, where there's this unbelievable story about IDEO, the design firm, and how they build into every single project the concept of having an advisory team that doesn't work on the project, not directly connected. So their entire culture is helpfulness is kind of built right into the culture. They support it in a whole bunch of different ways. One of my favorite ones is this last one on the list, leaving slack in employees' schedules. So I grew up in the world of consulting where everything is measured in the billable hour, and there's expectations around billability that are pretty high. And in some of my friends' organizations, they're even higher than where I had to work. If you want people to help others, you need to make sure they have time to do it. So built into their culture is time to help others. It's also how they're evaluated from a performance perspective. And they don't just live and breathe this, but their top leaders demonstrate it as well. So it's built into the entire culture. And by the way, they're doing all this collaboration and helpfulness without using any kind of social technology. They're achieving the outcomes. Again, this is technology independent by building it into their culture. So scale is important. So social moves really, really quickly. And so it's really important to have some guidance in place before you get started. So no one should have to reinvent the wheel on governance policies for social, because there's this amazing collection of publicly available social media policies that exists on the internet. And this is the website. This is put together by one guy, but you can submit your own if you're willing to share it. And basically, you can sort it and filter it by industry, and so you don't have to make one up. A lot of it is externally focused, but it's also internally focused. Some of them are super short. Those are the ones that get read, by the way. Some of them are a little bit longer. Some of them are not so user-friendly. Those are the ones that don't get read. Some of them have very, very friendly tones. So basically, I was doing a social project for the U.S. Department of Justice Asset Forfeiture and Money Laundering Division. So basically, they like to describe themselves as they're going to get the Bernie Madoff money back for the people who lost it. Anyways, we needed to figure out they're a bunch of lawyers, right? So they want some rules. And they've never had, of course, a social media, any social media policy or guidance or whatever word we want to use to describe it. So I was on here and found one for a similar organization in Australia and took it, copied it into a Word document using their format, and basically they changed very, very little of it. So we really didn't have to reinvent that wheel. It was written in a really friendly way, unlike lawyers, which was really nice. And in a way, so we were able to take what was done in Australia and apply it in the U.S. Department of Justice, and I just thought that was super cool. So totally recommend that you use this. Take a look at what's out here because it's really, really cool. Very, very helpful. So governance is really about making sure that there are no sharp edges. I like to think that the entire purpose of your governance plan or any policies you have around social should be to make sure that no one gets hurt. That should be your SharePoint governance policy as well. So educate employees and empower them to do the right thing. make it really easy, help people understand and manage the risks. So I've been working with an organization in Canada, and we're talking about the benefit of using the social capabilities of SharePoint, and we're having this conversation with the lawyer in the room. So guess what the lawyer says about social? Turn it off. So lawyers' jobs are to tell you what the risks are. Your job is to say, to determine what risks you can live with. And so we, obviously, in the government of Canada, you kind of have to listen to your attorneys. You're supposed to listen to them. So we really were able to now, okay, so she says no. HR, of course, says, oh my gosh, this is so cool. We should be doing this. And so now we've got HR and legal in the room, and we've got the people who are, you know, so we've got both sides of the argument. And the idea is to decide how much risk we can absorb, you know, what's comfortable, what's making us comfortable. It was really interesting. Turns out, it really wasn't the conversational aspect of the social technology. The lawyer just didn't want birthdays in there. So, okay, we'll take the birthdays out. Now, by the way, it was really kind of silly, because in the profile in SharePoint, you know, birthdays are there, and you can't put the year in. And in this particular agency, every department has a birthday celebration every month for everyone who has a birthday in that month. And they're sending around an email with who has birthdays this month and when are the emails. But we had to take birthday out of the profile because you can't even have the illusion that there is a birthday. So I'm not having them anymore, so I guess no one in Canada is either. So if, you know, look, if you treat people like grown-ups, they tend to behave like grown-ups. So you basically want to understand the risks, own them, and then hold people accountable. So when I talk about governance, I often tell people that a governance plan with no teeth that you're not prepared to enforce is not worth the paper it's written on. God forbid you're all not doing paper governance plans, because you don't want to do that because people don't read them. But most importantly is, look, if it means something to you, if it's worth having a policy about it, then you should enforce it. And if you're not, if it's not enforceable, then maybe you don't need the policy. So you really only need policies to protect the sharp edges. So this is, I like to say, think about the bumper guards that you had to put on your coffee table when your kids were just learning to walk. As soon as they learned to walk, those bumper guards could come off, and you didn't need them as much. So think about whether you can apply that when you're trying to think about how much should we allow our organization to do. All right. Fortunately, all the messaging from Microsoft really is aligned with this, and I'm really delighted to hear this. You don't have to do this all at once when you're with your entire organization. So we're going to find those critical moments of engagement, and we're going to start there. You don't have to get everybody engaged, by the way, and not everyone has to participate in order to have enormous successes. Sometimes you have to find those early adopters who are willing to try because they have a problem, and then everybody else will have the When Harry Met Sally moment. So don't necessarily try to make things happen all at once, but you do need a quorum. This is not like, you know, it's like, sort of like actually having one fax machine. One fax machine doesn't do a lot of good. So when we're introducing fax machines, one isn't enough. So obviously you want a fairly decent sized community in order to demonstrate value. But it doesn't have to be everything. Find a specific use case and don't over-plan. Yes, some planning, but not a whole lot, because you really want to see how are people going to use this technology in my organization. Think about integrating with tasks. Now, you don't have to define a governance plan because I just told you where to steal one. So you don't have to create it. And then look for your key influencers. Not everybody, you don't always have to lead. The leaders have to be involved, but not all of your influencers are at the top of the food chain. So you really want to look for who are the key influencers in your organization. Sometimes when I talk about user adoption, I play the Life cereal commercial. Everybody remember Mikey? Right, so Mikey didn't want to try anything, and then the brothers gave him, you know, the healthy cereal that mom wanted him to try, and Mikey liked it. Your organization has Mikeys, I'm sure, and if you can get one of them engaged, that's great. So those Mikeys tend to be key influencers, but they're not your only influencers. You really want to sort of launch to the people who are ready to be launched to. So at the URJ, our existing community for temple administrators is really, really engaged. They were actually already engaged before we gave them this great technology. So why would you start with a hard group? Right? Start with the easy ones where you can demonstrate some success. So find a meaningful use case. Ideally, what you want to find is a repeatable problem. So look for a problem that some other organization can look at. So if you're going to start with a small community or a small department, look for a problem that's repeatable so that, those moments can happen. As I said, it doesn't only have to be leaders, but you know, leaders, this is a great quote. This came from a McKinsey study. No involvement by leaders, no commitment by employees, no exceptions. So get your leaders to model the behavior. We are launching a social intranet, an intranet number one, social number two, for the first time in the Navy Marine Corps Relief Society, one of my current clients. And before we launched, we sat with every single executive and had them create a profile. I mean, we sat there with them while they created the profile to make sure that they were writing it in a friendly way. They're all retired military, and we did not write them writing their military bio. We wanted them to get a little bit more personal, and so we sat there with, and we said, you know, write it in the first person. One of the guys really got into it. So after he didn't want to put his former military bio, he says, okay, I can cooperate. I can do this for you. I am the most handsome and engaging person in this entire organization, and I think everyone will want to connect with me. So I don't think you're going to have too many of those people. And he didn't leave that one in, but it was kind of fun. We at least got him to start the behavior. So for social collaboration to be successful, it really is important that people model the behavior. So this means that leaders have to have the connection between social and business value. So it really means there needs to be a meaningful use case in your organization. And when there's meaningful business value and there is a problem that needs to be solved, it is much easier to get adoption and to find those key measurable business problems. All right, but I don't want you to think that this behavior is natural by any means. And you know, we talk often about how the younger generation coming into the workforce is going to immediately be able to adopt social and will totally know what to do with it in the organization. In my experience, that is just not the case. So whether or not my children coming into the workforce have great skills with Facebook in their personal lives, that doesn't mean that they know what to do with that capability inside the organization, because they may not know what's acceptable and appropriate inside the organization. And if they don't know, and leaders aren't modeling the behavior, let me tell you, if you're hiring a bunch of smart young people and bringing them into the organization, and your social tool isn't being used by the leadership team, do you think your smart young people are going to be using that tool? I mean, they're smart, they're young, and they're not going to hang in a place where they're not going to learn. So be really, really careful. So I think it's critically important to provide best practice and examples. So not everyone knows easily what makes a great social post. So provide some training. Show people examples of what makes a great post. Talk about asking questions, sharing great content. I like the expression, not working out loud, but narrate your work. Talk about, I just completed this phase of the project. Critical milestones in projects are great. Areas where you're asking questions, all of these kind of things. Give people examples. Teach people what makes a good post, and then engage around those posts. So I don't think that social behavior is necessarily natural inside more traditional organizations. So I think we really want to give people best practices and examples. When you can, find your early adopters and help them be your evangelists. So I was in, anyone in the Cargill presentation this morning? That was a fabulous conversation. And she talked about getting help. You don't have to do this alone, and getting those early adopters to engage. Super, super important. And if you want to, you can give them a name. So Anne is in here from Biogen IDEC. And I think Biogen IDEC has a very cool name for their early adopter communities. So when they went from Notes to Outlook, they created PUMAs, power users of Microsoft applications. So they had Outlook PUMAs, and then we had SharePoint PUMAs. And I actually described this story when I was at DuPont, saying that I thought it was such a clever name, and all the engineers are giggling. I'm like, really, what's so, you know, why are you giggling about a PUMA? Does anyone know what the acronym POOMA means? It's apparently a very common in engineering circles. It's basically the answer to the question, where did you get that estimate? pulled it out of my ass, basically. So they weren't, I spelled it out, but when I first said the word, they're all giggling. So if you work in an engineering company, I suggest you not call your evangelist Pumas.
I just have to tell you, our SharePoint's called Luna, and our SharePoint power users are the lunatics.
That's great, actually. So at one organization I'm familiar with, they call them internet champions. At Best Buy, if you were in that scenario, they call them ninjas. So there's lots of different things. It's interesting, at Cargill, she used the term ninja to mean something else, actually. She used the term ninja to talk about the people who lurk but don't participate. So in that organization, if you're going to use that term, I don't think ninja would be the right term for your early adopters, because you don't want them lurking. Your adopters are the people who are engaging. So, I think the term ninja ninjas acquire skills and they have levels. I guess in that term is not necessarily going to work in all organizations. The more important thing is you can get some help from people who are early adopters. And I know at Biogen IDEC, for the Outlook Pumas, they got T-shirts, and for the SharePoint, and no one was actually picking them up, is what they told us. They didn't even care about the T-shirts, but they had balloons on launch day so that people knew who were the people who were in and knew what was going on. So that visible recognition was actually more important. So I don't think you even have to spend very much money. And then if you're going to have a collaborative community, one of the most important roles is to have someone who is engaging as the moderator of that community. In the Yammer world, we call them the community manager. Especially when you're launching some new kind of behavior, having someone who's paying attention to what's going on in your group is absolutely critical. Because, for example, if someone asks a question, you want to make sure that that question gets answered. And if the question lingers for a long time without being answered, what you will find is that people will start going away and leaving the community. Now, eventually, communities tend to, when they catch on, will kind of happen on their own, and the role of the community manager will not necessarily be as much, not take up as much time. But it's really, really important that people know that there's a person paying attention to this. The other thing is, sometimes what's happening in your community conversations may need to be elevated outside that community, because it's not always possible that every single person in the organization is paying attention to that conversation. And community managers, community moderators, whatever you want to call them, can be extremely effective in making sure that the right conversations get directed to the right person. So one of the experiences we had at the URJ is that the initial moderator of one of our very successful communities wasn't really all that engaged. And when we switched moderators, and actually you didn't get rid of her, right, Larry? You just added one. Right. There was a lot more engagement. So at mentioning someone who can potentially answer a question, you don't have to know the answer, but you can at mention them. One of the things that they do at Cargill that I always tell people they should do is when a new person joins the community, welcome them. Point out the conversations that are hot, conversations that have taken place before they joined that they might want to just go check out and see what's going on. So making people feel part of the group. At Navy Marine Corps Relief Society, we have communities that we've established based on people's roles. They have 53 essentially offices around the world, and they're doing the same thing in all geographies. They have about 5,000 volunteers, and the chair of volunteers in each one of these offices has an enormous challenge. I mean, you are probably paying people to come and do their work. They don't pay people, and they still have to engage them. And so they really needed a community in which they could share their best ideas. And what's really critical, what's making the online collaboration work for them, is not only that they desperately needed a way to connect, but they also have people paying attention to make sure that no post goes unanswered, that no conversation gets unheard. So really, really important. And don't underestimate the importance of training. This behavior and using the technology may not be intuitive to people. Really, really important to emphasize and not underestimate the importance of training. And another little trick that I'll tell you is there's a new F word that you do not want to use when you're launching your social initiative in the business, and that F word is Facebook. Do not describe what you're about to launch as Facebook for the enterprise. That could be the kiss of death. Make sure that you are basically talking about we are solving business problems, we are tying it to the business, but don't assume that because people use that F word, that they're going to understand exactly how to use the technology that you're deploying. So a little hand-holding goes a long way. There are really no shortcuts when it comes to this. Basically, if you want people to use the tool, show them how to use it effectively. Give them lots of opportunities to learn. And it doesn't have to be one-on-one going up to people and sitting in their offices, but I'm not saying that won't help, especially with your leaders. But make training available to people if they're confused. And if you didn't go to the Cargill presentation, definitely watch it online, because she really has some great assets that she provides to people when they are sort of new community managers. Really, really great assets, and she's promised to share them in the Yammer network for that presentation. So go look for that one, and I think you'll find some assets that you'll be able to repurpose or steal. So one important thing I want to say is that social is supported in a lot of different places in SharePoint. So you can get all the benefits of social, even if your organization is not ready for Yammer, or if that's too scary. There are different ways in which you can engage socially. You don't, it's not just actually Yammer versus the newsfeed. There are other social elements in SharePoint that can help you engage users and get value beyond the typical document scenario. So lots of opportunity, and it's not just sort of those key things that we've been talking about here at the conference. So other ways to do this. In fact, I think the user profile is one of the greatest sort of baby steps to get into social, because if you can encourage people to create a meaningful SharePoint profile, you've got an incredible engine for expertise location. And so that is a really important place to encourage people to engage. Model a good example of an about me statement. Talk to your organization about guidelines for what you should put in, how well you have to know something in order to list it in your ask me about categories. Now, ask me about areas of expertise have a high value in search results. So it's important that if you know those things, that will make you findable. And there's all kinds of reasons that people want to be found in your organization. So make sure that you're promoting all of these things, sort of enrich the capabilities and kind of baby step your way into this new way of working. And one thing I've also learned for this is sort of not a one-time thing. No matter when you think you're there, it's going to be kind of a rinse and repeat. There's either going to be a new topic or a new community or new challenges that you want to introduce. So don't just think, I'll launch this stuff, I'll do all these great things, and then the magic will happen. You're going to really want to pay attention to this. Community moderation, as I said, probably the time commitment goes down over time, but not the fact that you need that. So I like to think of it as a journey, not a sprint. So try to keep your initial deployment simple. Align it where the work gets done. And if you take away one thing from this, it's to make sure that when you talk about social in your organization, that you're connecting it to a business challenge. Make sure that it's where work gets done, and lead the way. So I have one more story that I'd like to share. Let's hope I can do this video. And so this is kind of a great way to kind of wrap this up. I think the real power of social is just being understood. And I think you'll see in this video the joy that people are getting from engaging in a social way. So let's
I think the fundamental benefit of Yammer is the ability to network, to have conversations with people who know something about something.
Yammer gives me a sense of camaraderie. It really makes me feel very connected to all of my coworkers, all of my employees.
Yammer makes me excited about the opportunities we have to be able to go from me as an executive with high-level messaging and high-level planning to the entire employee base in an instant.
Yammer is a way for me to connect with folks that helps me be more effective in my job, to think differently, and to perhaps change the way I'm doing things.
Before, there was definitely a sense of sort of living in the silo and only knowing 20 or 100 other people at Xerox, and now I feel like I know thousands.
Yammer makes me happy because I feel like there's people that are there to help me whenever I need it.
It also makes me feel important because I've got things that other people need, and I can build on other people's ideas to make them the very best ideas they can be for Xerox.
So doesn't that make you feel happy? You know, I think the direction for social is very, very positive, and I think it's going to get even better when we start thinking about how we can eliminate some of the organizational and cultural barriers that exist in our organization. We can mitigate the risks. And of course, when social is aligned with where we work and when we work, and that I think is the most exciting of all of the announcements that we've heard at this conference so far, that's when we're really going to be able to see meaningful business value from these wonderful technologies that are coming into our organizations. So I really want to thank you for hanging in there with me. So in addition to my chocolate prizes, I've written a bunch of books with my two wonderful co-authors. The Rainbow, somebody told me that they have a rainbow collection of books on their desk because they've been using SharePoint for a really, really long time. So this current edition, we gave away copies this afternoon by tweeting, "I'm waiting in line to get my book signed." Tomorrow, we are doing a book signing, and I actually don't remember the time, at the AvePoint booth. So if you walk by the AvePoint booth, they bought the books, are giving them away, and all three of us will be there to sign them. And if you missed that one, we're doing a book signing later in the afternoon at the Microsoft Store, but of course, Microsoft's going to make you buy the book. However, I have two copies to give away. One, we're calling this the Harry Potter edition. The boys are, say, ooh, the men that I wrote this book with, say that it's fat because you don't shut up. So the longer chapters are apparently the ones that Sue wrote. And that's why the book is just like the Harry Potter books. It gets bigger every time. So I have one e-copy and one physical copy to give away. So you shared, and that was really wonderful. So I'll give you the physical copy. Does anyone else want to share their experiences in their organization? And if you do, I'll give you the e-copy. Okay. You have the, well, now you just need the green one to make a rainbow.
I think I have the rainbow already. I'm using the purple. So
okay, well, I can give you the e-version of the purple one. Yeah, well, Champion's a great name. Doesn't, you know, you don't have to be as creative as Puma, and maybe Puma doesn't work in your organization, as I've now shared. Okay, so there's lots of opportunity to learn more about social. I was handed a list of all the social Yeah, you get the book. Come up, and I'll give you the information afterwards. Absolutely. Gosh. Okay, so I was handed a list of all the social presentations, most of which have already happened. And so I went through and looked at, okay, these are the, if you want to learn more about this, and again, this deck is available already online, but these are the sessions that are happening after right now, because all those other ones you won't be able to go to because they already happened, but you can certainly play them. And then I also have some resources that I think are really, really helpful. And so there's the article I referenced in the Harvard Business Review. There's a fabulous book about user adoption by Michael Sampson, who lives in New Zealand. And it's the book is actually a little bit dated now, but it's still incredibly useful, and he really does a great job of it. Some recent articles, I can't sort of collect them fast enough, but in the last couple of weeks, Christian Buckley has published a lot of power user tips for using Yammer. And again, that's part of what you really want to educate people. Sort of, what can I be doing? What are some great ideas? Microsoft/Yammer has some great examples on socialjourney.yammer.com. Some great sort of business value metric information in the Deloitte white paper. So when you're looking for sort of how can we demonstrate to our organization what the possibilities are in terms of business success, this is a great resource to read. And then finally, Microsoft will give you some more resources. If you don't like the ones curated by me, you can go get some more from Microsoft. And again, this is all available in the deck. And then the list of every single social presentation, many of which have already happened. But you can certainly take a look at there. And the one that I've been talking about, the Cargill one, is SPC 295. So if you look on Yammer, it was a really fabulous presentation, and she's sharing all kinds of resources in her Yammer stream. So 6 o'clock, that's all I got. I'm here for questions. Thank you so much. And I hope everyone has a great time tonight.